Hey, Matt, quick one before we start. I saw Lucy on Other Voices the other night. She was brilliant. Brilliant performance. I know she's going on tour, so as proud dad, where's she playing?
No, it was wonderful, and thanks very much to the people at Other Voices, you know, because it's a great platform for any young artist. Lucy's playing Thursday the 28th of March, John, in the Grand Social. Tickets, only 15 quid. Tickets at Ticketmaster. So Lucy McQueen's Grand Social. John, you and I are going to be there, but we're going to stay at the back, right?
Okay. So that's Lucy McWilliams, 28th of March, Grand Social. Tickets at Ticketmaster.ie. Ads, schmads. If you don't want ads, that's okay. Choose the Dave McWilliams Plus option on Apple Podcasts. And hey, presto, no ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
How are you doing there? It is podcast time. John and Eliza here are sitting here arguing about the Beach Boys. Because what we were trying to do is we're trying to think of music that would lull you into a Southern Californian sense of... It's like if you've ever been to California, it's like being wrapped in cotton wool.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like nothing can go wrong. Everyone looks lovely. Everything's great. And now, John, Dunleary is the Southern California of Ireland.
Yeah, it's the Orange County, as I said.
The Orange County.
I lived in Orange County for a few months. And it's just clean, it's sterile.
Anodyne, saccharine.
Anodyne, that's the word I was looking for.
That's what we are. So just so you know, John and I, born and bred in Dunleary, the constituency, which in 1983, I can tell you, voted for abortion and divorce when all the rest of you were all over the shop, right? Now we stand alone again. But unfortunately, John, in 1918, we voted unionist. The only place.
Did we?
The only place
today, I mean,
in what became the Republic of Ireland to vote unionist,
you're kidding,
was this place, Kingstown.
Kingstown,
and we are now
yeah.
out again on our own. We've more cares than you can take a big stick at. We love a durable family. We love it all, right? That Dunleary was the only constituency that voted yes in this last referendum. So we are unentitled to speak, John. We're not representative. And on Twitter the other day, so I put up just jokingly, I said, oh, look at Dunleary, we're out on our own again. Yeah. And then it's mad. Yeah, you posh bollocks, you this, that, almighty. You know.
You get that anyway.
You're West Brit, you're all this sort of, hey, West Brit, come on, have a go if you think you're hard enough. Anyway, my point is, we are at a fantastically interesting inflection time.
Yeah.
An inflection point, because Irish politics, yes, the referendum was botched. Yes, the communication wasn't good. Yes, the wording wasn't good. Yes, loads and loads of people couldn't be ours turning up, right? Mm. All that stuff. But what it's telling us is that the political system, based on the underlying economic, demographic, social realities, is shifting in Ireland and shifting to a place where I think we have no idea where we're going.
Well, do you know what's interesting? And I was really proud on the 8th because I went down to the polling station with my three girls that were voting for the first time. They were voting
Did
for
they
the
all
first
vote
time.
No?
No, but it was the point that there's a whole new world.
A whole new world.
Whole new generation.
It's a new generation. And the thing is, what this tells us, because if you look at all the polling, right?
Mm.
All the indications of Ireland, the most predictable people in Ireland are the middle-aged and the old. They have spoken.
Yes.
You know, they vote Fine Gael, they vote Fianna Fáil, they vote Labour. They have spoken, right? What is up for grabs is this new generation that has never spoken before, or if they've spoken, they've never been listened to before, which is actually probably the key issue. And now everybody's sitting up and listening and saying, what the hell's going on? So let's try and make a little bit of sense and offer a little bit of clarity. On the great pollster himself, we talked to Kev Cunningham. He's over there in Stony Batter. God love him over there, other part of the city, you know?
Part of the no world.
He's part of the no world. He's in the Oakland, California over there. He's out in Oakland, okay? Let's go and talk to Kev. Kev, how are you?
Great, Dave. I'm delighted to be on to chat to you about this to chat to you in your enclave down there.
Oh, very much. It's an enclave, yeah. No, we feel that we are in enemy territory now. And on Twitter, we have been abused from a height on the basis of our West Britishness and our remoteness and our bubbleness and all that stuff. But let's actually talk about the referendum. What happened? Why did it happen? This is the key, because this is a proper kicking for the present government, a proper kicking. Explain to me what happened and why do you think it happened? And let's drill down the numbers and see what the polls are telling you and see what you thought of in advance and what you think now. And then what does it actually mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, delighted to. I mean, from one perspective, I think the political media, I think, largely has moved on from this story in some respect already, but it certainly shouldn't have, because this is quite a substantial kicking for the government in some respect. I mean, 45% of people voted. It was a big enough turnout. You can't really put this in the same class as the children's referendum. I don't know if you remember that one, but that was a pretty low turnout. It didn't do very well, and people moved on relatively soon after. But in this case, clearly people were motivated to vote out and vote against this in very, very substantial numbers. And one of the things that's most obvious about this, I mean, we did an exit poll with the Sunday Independent, and it showed how the political leaders weren't able to bring their voters in the direction of the yes vote. So you had Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin, and obviously all the other smaller parties advocating for a yes vote. But you have 71% of Fianna Fáilers, 88% of Sinn Féin voters voting no. And wow. I think it's an artifact of a destabilized sort of political system, perhaps the voters themselves unanchored from the political leadership that is intended to bring them in various different directions. And I think it's quite interesting, really, to be honest with you.
So wait a sec. So close to 80% of Fianna Fáil voters and 88% of Sinn Féin voters voted against the advice of their own leadership, explicitly against. I mean, that is a massive, massive disjoint between the political class and the actual people they're supposed to be leading.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of these things I think I've struggled with for a bit of time, where you have public opinion which shows one thing and you have an entire political class which believes in its own bubble to some extent. Very different attitudes about where Ireland is on various different issues. I mean, very simply, the number one issues in Ireland for quite a substantial period of time, at least, have been housing, cost of living. And now it's been joined by the issue of immigration. And those issues, it just doesn't seem like the government is getting to grips with at all. And so by proposing a referendum on an issue which isn't necessarily a salient issue at this point in time, I think it sort of looks like they're thumbing the electorate in some way. It felt perhaps a little too obvious to host this referendum, particularly on women in the home, on International Women's Day, and basically in conjunction of an idea that they were going to win this easily. And yes. I think that's a serious problem when they didn't, because at the end of the day, it means that the government isn't as popular as I might think it could be. I mean, you would think that this is just a straightforward, easy referendum to win. I mean, broadly speaking, the voters have voted in favour of these sorts of initiatives for a significant period of time. You had the blasphemy referendum relatively recently, 65% voted in favour. The divorce referendum, which sort of got rid of some of the restrictions around divorce, 82% voting in favour of that. Obviously, the abortion and same-sex marriage ones. So you could see why they might have made the conclusion that this is going to be a very, very popular thing. This is going to be something that they can actually benefit from. And they even tagged on this thing about carers, which I assume they thought at the time was going to, you know, make it even more popular. But I think in constraining it and trying to control the electorate, trying to control the narrative, essentially, they created something else. Voters wanted to understand, was there a catch, I think. And one of the things we did in that post-election survey is ask people open-ended why they voted the way they voted. And was able to use an algorithm, a bit like ChatGPT, to kind of process the open-ended text responses to try to understand what was the motivations of the types of people voting no in particular? And this was published in the Sunday Indo as well. And you could narrow it down really to sort of three things, I think. Number one was the lack of clarity, lack of information, inadequate consultation on behalf of the public. That's what they thought. And the other thing that links to it is a general opposition to the government and distrust. And when you combine the lack of clarity with the distrust, it led to this, naturally led to this no vote. Because, well, if people aren't getting the right information and the government is, if they're perceiving the government to be quite vague about this issue, then invariably people are going to just look for other information elsewhere. And when they're finding that other information, we could talk about this in a minute, they're landing in the no side. They're landing in that direction. I mean, there is another side, which is about a conservative vote that's out there, certainly in relation to the protection of mothers, protection of marriage in the Constitution, and those sorts of more traditional arguments. That is definitely part of this no vote. It's obviously not, you know, the 70% or so that voted no, but there's very much this distrust, which is combining with the vagueness. And this, I guess when you have someone trying to sell something to you, but they're not really willing to tell you what it's about, and it all seems a bit underhand, it all seems a bit too obvious, then I guess people are defaulting a little bit to try to understand more about it. And I think that's one of the things that's quite interesting. I mean, there's another thing that's particularly important, which is the velocity of opinion and how that's changed.
But we can probably explain that to me. That in a sec.
Well, the thing I found particularly fascinating, now obviously this is as a pollster, I guess, is how opinion shifted and the speed with which it changed. Okay, so we had a poll basically a week before which showed an enormous number of undecideds. It showed that the only people who were interested in this issue, the only people who chose from a series of different news items the referendum as the news item that they were interested in, those people were no voters. But at that point in time, most people who were giving an opinion were suggesting they were going to vote yes. I did a poll midweek by Tuesday and Wednesday because I felt that this is one of these referendums which is going to shift. And I wanted to understand how and why this happens. Was it the case that people were going to be shy voters, that weren't telling pollsters how they were going to vote? Or was there going to be this late swing? So I did a poll Tuesday, Wednesday, and that showed 50% voting in favor of the family and 50% voting against the family one. And 60-40 against on the care referendum. And remember, the results, this is Tuesday, Wednesday, and the results 2 days later, did a poll 2 days later on Friday night, which showed very much the same as the actual result, 68% against the family one and 74% against the care one. And just to put that in perspective, that is effectively a 15-point swing or thereabouts against these things happening in 48 hours.
In 48 hours.
That is incredible. 15% of people to shift in 48 hours. It's stunning. Like it's that sort of velocity is not the sort of thing you ever see. It also points to this thing I mentioned at the start, that opinion is completely unanchored from the views of the political elites. The people are making their own mind up very late and in conjunction with potentially their news consumption habits, and how those news consumption habits are developing is probably even more important than ever, really, at this point.
Well, I mean, this is fascinating. I want to break this down to two major areas. One is the area you just touched on there, which John and I have been talking about quite a bit over the last few weeks, which is the diffusion of the message, right? So in the old days, you had one main state broadcaster. You had a very, very simple and very, very straightforward way of communicating with people, right? Now people are going all over the place and their views are now all over the place, right? That's the first thing. But the second thing I want to just touch on first is this notion that over the last 10 years, there has been the presumption that Ireland is moving inexorably towards a liberal democracy with a bias or a jaundice towards what would be described as woke ideas from being a very conservative country. Does this referendum tell us, hold on a second, you cannot assume anything on that agenda? Is it a sense, because you see John's mate Tucker Carlson is out saying this is a fantastic sign that Ireland is voting no. You see all sorts of, let's say, anti-establishment, anti-government, anti-centrist hunters saying this is a wonderful sign. Is it? I mean, is this a real moment is what I'm saying?
Okay, I think the vast majority of people who are voting no were doing so not explicitly because of these traditional views. Though it is worth saying that the strongest no vote was amongst the same sorts of people that are growing more conservative. And we can see this conservative shift in Ireland.
Who is that? And explain that to me.
So in poll after poll, what we observe is that those that tend to support independent candidates and a small party called AIM2 and a little bit of Sinn Féin tend to hold relatively more conservative opinions. These are the people who voted the strongest no in this particular referendum. So there is a sense that there is this kind of group of voters that are getting together. I don't know what direction they're going to go. There's a new kind of small independent party, independent conformist style party that is formed. They've got a couple of TDs. Maybe they'll capture a little bit. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that at the next European elections, the Midlands Northwest region will elect someone who is more conservative than anything we currently have in the political system, more conservative than, say, Fine Gael, at least, or Fianna Fáil, as it is currently, when it comes to issues like immigration and that sort of stuff. That is definitely happening. There's no doubt about that in my mind. I think this particular referendum, it's hard to say this is an artifact of that vote, because you're talking about 70% and 67% voting against it. In some cases, particularly the CARE referendum, you do have a combination of people who are voting against that one. You did have a lot of left-wing voters for People for Profit and Social Democrats, who voted yes in relation to the family one and no in relation to the CARE one. That kind of yes-no switch is very clear amongst a subset of kind of middle-class left-wing people.
That's how John voted, by the way. Typical yes middle-class...
Private market.
Typical middle-class left-wing person. At least he did vote.
True.
Yeah, like, to be honest, I got in a 10 to 10, I must say. But I do that to try to, so I can see what the turnout is.
This is in your professional capacity. But let us talk about the whys, right? Because, as you say, there is a small minority of people who are animated by the conservative issue of women in the home. They are maybe a hangover from what was mainstream years ago, but they're conservative, they're Catholic, they're Christian, they believe in the Constitution should protect these things. Okay, so we're assuming that's right. But what is probably more interesting is the chaotic no. And by I mean the chaotic no, it's the reaction, yeah. You know, that we're going to give them a kicking. And that is a sort of an incendiary part of the electorate for the European election and for the general election coming up. Who are they?
Yeah, who are the that generic no?
Yeah, that kind of what I would call the incendiary no. The sort of like the you have said yes, therefore I'm going to say no. You have said this is what the establishment want, and this is what official Ireland, for want of a better description, wants. I'm going to say no. Who are these people, and why is this vote growing so quickly? And as you say, the velocity of this vote growing so quickly.
Well, the velocity, to my mind as well, is the velocity of how people are changing when it comes to referendums and their ability to move around without any reference to what the political leadership is doing. And I think that's also one of these things that, as you would have said, historically speaking, people would have just responded to the likes of whatever Eamon de Valera says or whatever the leaders of those parties would have said. But when it comes to those voters that you're talking about, I mean, one of the interesting things is that kind of distinction, that yes-no versus the no-no. The no-no was very, very solid in very working-class areas in Ireland. There's no doubt about that in my mind. That when it came to people who were voting no, and the family one in particular, that had a much more working-class element to it. And you can see that in terms of the constituencies and the parts of Ireland which were voting no explicitly. It is worth mentioning, though, that there are, I mean, when it comes to that CARE referendum, there was a significant subset that were voting no, as I said, this kind of middle-class yes-no vote, which was essentially doing so in part of a response to the CARE part of that. So that the most left-wing part of the electorate demographically would tend to be younger women. And they were one of the groups that were most likely to vote against the CARE one, which again is the same referendum, which was talking about removing the clause of women's place in the home. And that just shows how much these things are shifting around, I guess.
Can I also just, let's focus on what a lot of people are now concluding, which is, and you started with at the very top, which is that the state apparatus, the political system, the spin doctors, the entire sort of machine that is in around Dublin too, the entire machine, doesn't really understand the country.
Yeah, I think this is a concern I sometimes have when you see polling figures that indicate one thing and an entire political class is kind of slightly different. And it always seems to be more prominent when it comes to some of the more economic issues, when it comes to the redistribution of wealth and all that sort of stuff. There does seem to be a little bit of a disjoint. When it comes to housing, it's the most obvious example in which people have been talking about this issue for a long period of time, and it feels like the government isn't quite catching up with it. it also feels in some respect, like as a political system, this idea of velocity, as I said before, it's like once the sort of shackles of the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael bi-party system released itself, you saw this surge of support for Sinn Féin immediately after the last general election.
Yes.
Like I tried to think about this in terms of like a spring. If you kind of contract a spring for a long enough period of time or whatever, and then you let it go, it just stretches out. And it's just the idea of the electorate stretching out into policy positions and issues once it's allowed to do so. But you were talking about the out of touch thing. And so we were talking about media and all that sort of stuff. There are some issues in some areas where there's a clear distinction between public opinion and the political class, if we can call it that.
Immigration is a good one.
Immigration. So, for example, when I do these polls, I often ask people what news that they're consuming. So that might be your RT, the Irish Times, Independent, tabloids, gripped media, the local newspaper or whatever it might be. Most of the time, those that consume RT tend to be in the middle of the political spectrum because RT is the biggest player in the media market. And for that, for an RT viewer to be significantly different from the average person, well, it's very difficult. But when it comes to the issue of immigration, RT consumers are significantly less concerned with immigration. I mean, we might think of that as probably a positive thing in some respects, but it is interesting that on that particular issue, the issue is now rising in salience that the RT viewer is completely different to the non-RT viewer when it comes to immigration. When it comes to this referendum, it was interesting. I looked at newspaper consumption and media consumption in general. And on one hand, you had the local paper for John Leary, the Irish Times, which had the most sort of yes voters.
The Financial Times.
And the Telegraph.
And the Telegraph. Go on.
Sorry. So on the one end, you do have the Irish Times, which had by a step the most yes voters on a per capita basis. And at the other end, you have the tabloids and local newspapers. And local newspapers kind of take into the fact this kind of rural dynamic as well. And also you have people who don't pay any attention to news. They were also heavily on the no side. And you kind of start to wonder, well, where are they going to go when they start paying attention to news? I mean, one of the media outlets we discussed before, Gripped Media, they also had a very large subset of no voters. And it tended to be, when I was looking at this a week before the referendum itself, those consumers, the people who are looking at Gripped in particular, were the only ones who seemed to be very interested in the referendum. And that was interesting as well, because it showed the dynamic of, well, is this the media system that is actually in some way driving public opinion? Is that changing? Twitter's definitely significantly changed over time. There's a famous article written after the 2016 Brexit referendum of how Twitter is not a representative of the overall public, because Twitter was very Remain. Nowadays, Twitter is the opposite.
Yes.
Twitter is now, in an Irish context, much more likely to have the more anti-immigration sentiment.
Yeah.
So it's not representative, but it's on the opposite spectrum. And the reason why I think this is important is because with this velocity, what people are talking about, what the media is saying in the last couple of days, is obviously going to be of increasing and significant importance, I think.
So what you're saying is that our general election, our European elections, everything is up for grabs and the last 48 hours counts. Whereas in the old days, the last 48 hours, you kind of thought it was either in the bag one way or the other.
I'm not going to make a prediction that things are definitely going to change in the last 48 hours because I don't want to make predictions yet. But I think there's definitely this velocity that's there, and it could mean that at some point in time, I think particularly as you get closer to the election itself, when people start tuning in, whether it's the last 48 hours or the last week, and the way in which these shifts can happen are quite interesting. I mean, when it comes to local elections, I mean, as we said before, there's a lot more people that get elected per area, which gives a lot more opportunities for these sorts of radical right parties, I guess, to do relatively well. When it comes to European elections, there's obviously a bit more of a broadcast media dynamic, which will influence things probably in the latter stages as well. But I could be fairly certain that things are going to shift in some way in that direction.
Kev, could I just ask you one question? Just going back a little bit to the out of touch thing. I know we've been talking about the role of the media and all that kind of stuff, but I've just, how much of it was actually down to the wording? Because it was so vague and people were talking about this in the run up to it. So when you hear Varadkar say, well, we clearly got it wrong, well, they knew that they had the wording wrong and it was causing a lot of people a lot of angst me included.
No, I think you're absolutely spot on. I mean, I read through the open-ended and I haven't approximated the exact numbers, but I strongly believe that the biggest argument is around this lack of clarity and clearness about what it meant by durable relations and what the point of that particular argument was, because there wasn't really, as there had been in sort of the same-sex marriage or the abortion one, there hadn't been real-life examples that they were using to try to convince voters of this. But I think that one of the important things is the level of scrutiny over the wording in this particular one, I think, is probably a little bit higher than the level of scrutiny over wording in others, because I think at the end of the day, there it does overlap with this lack of trust in the government in relation to these sorts of issues. Because when it comes to this sort of socially conservative issues, they're probably, I mean, the polling that I have tends to be a little bit more conservative than where the government is right now in terms of the initiatives that are being discussed. So you can see how there's going to be this distrust that feeds into this. I mean, there's one thing for the proposals to be unclear, but you can still agree with them and still trust them. Well, like, I don't know the exact wording of the blasphemy one or the divorce one, or I wasn't really that into the minutia of the same-sex marriage wording. But, you know, you could probably trust the process in some respect. Yeah. In this case, yeah, it's this lack of trust in the system and the government that is feeding into, well, we won't vote for this because, you know, it's this kind of, how do you deliver a vague message if you're not trusted, I guess.
Well, let us leave it there. It's the issue to end on, the lack of trust, the lack of credibility. And, you know, the problem is that in democracies, trust is everything, because, you know, you're not browbeating the people into anything. You're basically trying to make sure that they trust you. And away you go. So let's leave it there. Kev, as always, an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thanks a million, Dave. Thanks, John, too.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So the word is trust. That's the watchword in all of this. And you know what? He was talking there, I was kind of thinking that for me, it's about communication and about trust and trusting the communication. But, you know, you can see this really crap communication crops up all the time and you see it all the time. You know, immigration is a great example of that. And all those protests that spring up in all the towns when immigrants suddenly descend on a town because nobody has prepped the people or taken time to explain why immigrants are coming to their area and why it's necessary and, you know, alleviate all their fears. Because as you've always said, you know, people fear change and they fear the unknown.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And then I think this is just another symptom of that.
Well, I think it's, remember we did a podcast about 2 or 3 months ago on the need for a second republic? Right? The idea that Ireland's republic as is, the constitution, the way in which the system works, doesn't really function properly. And I think this is much bigger than we think. I think this is the beginning of a proper shift in Irish economics, in Irish demography, in Irish politics. I think we've been lulled into a false sense of security about the way the country thinks about itself. And I think the party political system is not fit for purpose anymore. I think it's so weird that Sinn Féin, allegedly a party that has an iron grip on its own people. This is always the narrative, you know. Sinn Féin is so well organized, it understands the people, it's on the doorsteps. 88% of Sinn Féiners voted against Mary Lou.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. I think it's 77% of Fianna Fáilers voted against Micheál Martin. So what does that tell you? It tells you that the political machine is completely broken. Mm. And it tells you that despite the economy doing well, despite unemployment being the lowest ever, despite incomes being the highest ever, despite the more people at work, all those traditional things that one would think, okay, the society is at ease with itself. On the contrary, the society is bubbling up under the surface. You've mentioned immigration. I think immigration is, you know, immigration, housing, and inflation. Yeah. When I say inflation, the cost of living. They're the issues. Nobody really cares about carers or the constitution or the finances. I happen to think, you know, the constitution's written nearly 100 years ago. Not surprising, we should change it.
Mm.
But I think what we're at here, John, is an inflection point that is much bigger than we think. The fact that we live in Dunleary in our own bubble, right? In our lovely little liberal bubble, right? But what is happening here is the pace of change in the society, the expansion of the population, the change in immigration, the change in the way people are living, the way people are consuming media. Remember the last couple of podcasts we've done have all been about, you know, diffusion.
Yeah.
So remember we
impact of technology and
technology and the fact that what you're finding is the mainstream, the old school, the whatever you want to call us, traditional or non-traditional media is losing its grip on the message. And this goes back to your communication.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not that the communication is wrong. Nobody knows how to communicate at a time when everybody is receiving their news from various different places. And that, I think, is what we've been speaking about the last few weeks. We've been talking about this, which is when you have a message that used to be mediated by an expert group, let's say, and now that message is open to everybody and everyone, and people are, let's say, on social media, they're changing their minds, et cetera, et cetera. And that velocity idea that Kev talked about means that you have a massive part of the electorate that is up for grabs on every issue.
Yeah, yeah. And like he used the phrase, leaders weren't able to bring the voters with them. But going back to communication thing, communication is two-way. They weren't listening.
They weren't listening, but it means also that maybe what could be even more interesting is we are at a point where the society is changing in front of our eyes and where the inability or the unwillingness or the inability of the political machine to bring people with them is not only a reflection of their lack of effort in the communication, but it's a reflection of something much bigger, which is that the society is shifting in a tectonic way, that the actual plates underneath the society are shifting. And again, because the country's got rich, because the country has become, at least on paper, a much more cosmopolitan, much wealthier, much liberal place, the assumption was that that's all fine. Now what you're finding is no. What is really fascinating, and I always go back to history, is to look at repetitive examples where societies change and the political, economic, demographic, media world doesn't see that.
Mm.
And to see what was going on in those countries. Like the interesting thing about all these, remember we talked about the Black Swan, right?
Yeah, yeah.
An unpredicted event that has massive consequences. And the other thing about the Black Swan is always after a Black Swan, people say, oh, well, it was because of this, this, and this.
But we
didn't see it coming at all. And I think we're at
hindsight is 2020 vision.
Well, I thought the grace is hindsight is foresight of a gobshite, which I think is a great expression.
I like that.
Hindsight is the foresight of a gobshite. But if you actually think about it, right, what we are seeing here is an old system in Ireland of NGOs, political parties, political hacks, etc., moving in one direction. And you have a population moving in a completely different direction. And I now think, John, that the Irish population is completely up for grabs. And I don't think we have any idea what this country is going to look like in 5 years' time politically. I don't think we have any idea. I don't think we have any idea of the leadership. I think the whole existing leadership that we see now, they could be all gone in 12 months' time. And that's what actually happens sometimes in political and economic and financial and actually environmental and ecological things, right? The status quo not only disappears, but disappears like snow off a ditch and something totally new emerges. Like, you look at what happened in the UK, right?
Yeah.
UK in 2012, 2013 was a normal country. There was Labour, there was Conservatives, there was the Liberal Democrats, yet the Scottish Nationalists were doing their thing, but they hadn't made a huge breakthrough. That country now is a completely different place.
Yeah.
With completely different people.
Yeah.
People you would have never imagined would have actually held high office. Held high office.
Yeah.
Because the issues became conflated and nobody understood what was going on. Nobody understood the anger on the street. Nobody understood the regional disparities. And suddenly what you get is a totally new dispensation. And I think this is the early shots of that war. And we have no idea which way the country's going to go.
The air of spring.
The air of spring. I love it. I love it. John is going to be out on the streets before you know it. Before you know it. But there you go. I think we're at a completely and utterly new dispensation. And anybody who moves on from this and says, oh, don't worry, it was about we didn't understand what was going on. And, you know, no. When you get that level of apathy on the middle ground, who didn't turn up, and commitment on those who did turn up, what you're looking at is a totally new dispensation. Exciting, yes. Interesting, yes. But also, not much scary, but certainly unprecedented. And we're going into unprecedented waters. Talk to you on Tuesday.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.